Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Rebecca Mahan, and we're going to be talking about her program and book, VOTE, Victims Overcoming Traumatic Events. Rebecca is an author and radio show host and has spent over 20 years studying domestic violence and working with victims of various traumatic events. She was employed for more than 10 years as a law enforcement officer and had been a field training officer for more than 6 years. She has more than 5 years' experience working directly with those who sought success of their independent business goals. Rebecca has combined her knowledge and experience to create a successful program for those exposed to domestic violence and other traumatic events. Her goal is to assist law enforcement, first responders, and others in combating domestic violence, saving lives, reducing injury, and helping others to move forward to healthier lifestyles. You can find out more by visiting her website, which is www.rebeccamahan.com, or you can also visit www.voteprogram.org. And I do have direct links to both of those websites in the show page description. So that, I'd like to welcome Rebecca to the show. Good day, Rebecca.
Well, hello. Thank you for having me on your show, Robert. I'm excited to be here.
It is my pleasure, and you know, excuse me, this is such an important topic, and your work is just so necessary, unfortunately, but I'm glad that we're going to be able to spend some time talking about it today.
Thank you so much.
Well, let's start with, I mentioned, you know, your former law enforcement officer, and I guess probably the best place to start is what was the genesis of VOTE, you know, the Victims Overcoming Traumatic Events? And it's both a book and a program, correct?
It is. I created a program and then asked the sheriff's department that I was working for at the time if I could implement the program. We had been asked to do a community-oriented policing project, which is called COPS, and I had said I had this idea and wanted to try it. So they let me implement it for 1 year to see what the results were going to be, and it showed a 97% success rate the first year, and the last statistic that I received from it, and it had went for the following 7 years, it was 95% and above in where they did not go back to the same house in reference to domestic violence calls.
Wow. That's,
so it's really
that's a,
huge.
That's a huge. Yeah, it is. That is a huge success rate. Wow. So I guess if you could talk a little bit about, about domestic violence and, you know, obviously going, having to go back is common. So can you talk a little bit about domestic violence and, you know, what are some of the challenges that law enforcement and first responders have when replying or responding to those kinds of calls?
Absolutely. And I'll start with your last question first, in that law enforcement responds to a number of different calls that are very, very dangerous. One of the most dangerous calls is domestic violence. The reason for that is because couples tend to have a huge emotional investment in their relationship, and it is the most volatile. So things can escalate very, very quickly, and I think probably in the last 10, 15, even 20 years, you'll have seen some very cases that have had huge media coverage. And so it is something that is not uncommon. Domestic violence has been very, very common to many relationships for a long period of time, but it's a very secret type of thing. Most people do not want to share, victims do not want to share with their family or friends that they're being abused. And most aggressors do not want to share that they're abusing their partner. So it's something that has tended to be for a long period of time behind closed doors until something very tragic happens. And there's a cycle of violence that starts in the honeymoon phase where everybody is just excited and happy to be with each other. It's very blissful. And over time, a little bit of incidences will happen that will progress into another stage. And then, so during that time, the tension, which is called the tension building stage, will just increase to a point where neither of the parties really know how to handle the situation without using some type of violence. And it can start with a slap. It can start with throwing things. To move on to something that is very explosive, and it's called the explosive stage. And it can lead into something that can be fatal. So there's three stages, and initially what happens is the stages are kind of long in duration, and they get shorter over time. But once the explosive stage has ended, there's usually a period where the aggressor is somewhat apologetic and tries to win the victim back, regain their trust, and the honeymoon stage starts all over again. So it's not uncommon that a victim will have had a severe beating and get flowers the next day, and the victim takes the person back and that they're sorry for what they've done, and it's not going to happen again. And unfortunately, that is not the case.
Wow. Yeah, you know, I've talked to many people who have been involved in that cycle, and it really is, you know, it seems whenever you're involved, and if you're, you know, in the victim aspect of this interaction, that there's always that hope that, like you said, that they'll change, or that it was a one-time affair, you know, and then it repeats. And now, so for officers who respond, you know, obviously they're going to be responding during that explosive stage, right? That's what would
Correct.
Tend to signal. So when that happens, do they respond differently to like a first time explosive or a repeat? How do they kind of work with, you know, the idea that recognizing that it can be a cycle that could be repeated?
I think most agencies everywhere, the agencies that I have worked for, which has been two, we're trained in the state of California a specific way to handle domestic violence. I can't speak for all other states, but I will say that it is probably pretty consistent in how an officer responds. And the number one goal for a law enforcement officer is safety. So to protect themselves, to protect the victim, if there's any children in the home, and in essence, the aggressor too, because you'll have seen a number of media cases where you have a homicide-suicide situation occur. So safety is the number one. And there are steps that in California, everything is handled. We don't know always if it's the first time it's happened at that particular home or not, unless an officer has been there or the house has been in the area for a long period of time. I mean, you could have a new person, new couple that moves into the house, and that house could have already had a history of domestic violence. But you take every situation the same. In the sense of safety and precautions, not an opportunity for anyone in this world that should be, or I should say, that should be getting hurt. And so we don't want the opportunity for that to happen. So everything is pretty standard in how it's going to be addressed. We're not going to be lax 1 minute and not the next. Because any one of those times that you're not using the tactics to ensure safety, someone could end up getting hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with safety being the number one goal, and you said tactics for that, what do you mean by tactics? What are some of the things that would be employed to help ensure some safety for those involved?
Well, they would assess the situation upon arrival from the time that the dispatch has received the phone call. They're deciphering the level of violence that has already occurred, and things like that. There's certain tactics that law enforcement doesn't share publicly because they have to stay safe as well. But assessing the situation and they want to know, is there weapons that are in the home, or is the person who called in, if it's the victim, is that aggressor still at the house? Or abuser, we call them the aggressor. So there's a lot of different things, even just making the approach to the home to do that safely. And that would be in all instances, because again, safety is at the forefront. And once contact has been made and the parties are being talked to with each other and trying to de-escalate the situation and rectify it as quickly as possible, there are also resources that officers leave with victims to let them know that there is help available so that they can get healthy again if they need to get out of the situation, what they can do, if there's children involved, how to handle that. And in California and a lot of other states, there is compensation available. It's basically between, from what I understand, up to about $25,000 that a victim can receive to be able to get out of the situation and get back on his or her feet.
Wow. I had no idea that was available, because it seems that so often when you hear about these cases, the victim feels that, that they're kind of stuck, in the situation. In many cases they would be, if it's someone who's dependent on the aggressor, for their livelihood, that it becomes, even more difficult to try and break that bond and then just try, maybe just go along with it and hope for the best.
Very, very true. And that's one of the tactics that abusers or aggressors use to maintain control of their victim. And control is the number one thing for an abuser or aggressor. They want to make sure that they have the person completely controlled. And one of the means is to use finances as a tactic.
I've seen this, I've seen this before, and I've had I've had a few guests on the show who've felt, that they were in that case and just struggled with trying to find out what to do next. And now, when it comes to domestic violence, is it, we mentioned that it's kind of gone on for a long time, and you're right, we do seem to hear more now about some of the tragic cases that seem to come to light. So is it a case where that we're just, it's just easier for the spotlight to be on those that because in some ways it seems like it's on an increase, but then I don't know if that's the case, or if it's just that the light is easier shown on those cases now with all the different types of media outlets and ways we have of seeing these things. Oh, Oh, my goodness. We lost Rebecca. She'll be right back in one moment. Hold on, everyone. Okay, we've got Rebecca back. Okay, Rebecca, sorry about that. I don't know.
No, that's quite fine.
Yeah, sometimes it happens, I guess. So the question was, is it just that it's easier for us to see these things happen, because of all of the media and the ability to highlight it, or is there an increase in domestic violence as of late?
Well, actually, I think there's a few components that come into play when you're talking about an increase in domestic violence. So, yes, in answer to your question, one is because of media. We have social media. We have so many different forms now for situations to become exposed. And you even have celebrities that are campaigning against it, and you have celebrities that have been in the midst of it themselves. So social media and media come into play. Another thing to think about, though, is the increase in population. So, and not only that, but you've got cultural issues that come into play with that. And with the amount of people in the United States in various cultures, some are more apt to absolutely keep things silent until something explosive happens. And now over time, you also have where, because the Americans, and this is including everyone in the United States, are seeing that there are resources out there. There's national hotlines that can be called. The doctor's office that you go to now when you go in for your female exam are asking you if you are being abused. There's more opportunity to discuss that with someone and bring it out. So you have a lot of different components. So I'm not sure that there's an increase unless you look at it population-wise, because there's more population than there was 20 years ago and 20 years before that. But exposure to that and it actually being addressed, I think, has so many different variables and components that bring it into play. So I wouldn't necessarily say, yes, there's an increase. But, yes, there's an increase of exposure in that the public is becoming more aware of the cases surrounding them.
Yeah, okay. Well, and it makes sense. I mean, all of those different factors I could see could be components. And also it seems that, in more economic times, troubled times, that also increases pressure within a family unit, and that could also help ignite maybe that particular explosive stage.
Anytime that there's stressors in a relationship, that can come into play. The focus, though, is to teach people early on how to address stress in their life, anxiety, and depression, and also any of the things that can become that. There's basically five major stressors in life, and job loss is one, getting married is another, divorce, having a baby, loss of a loved one. Those are some major stressors. But in our world, I think despite the fact that we have so much technology and ease of things, there's still a lot of stress. And I think the stressors, as much as some of us who've lived in a society without the technology, these are a little bit more stressful to a younger generation. You'll have students that are trying to get homework done, and it needs to be done on the computer, and the computer doesn't work, and they're stressed out because they know that they have to go to school to get that, to turn that in, and they can't get it done. Or those are little things that start out over time. If we can teach at a young age how to handle the stress when it arises in a very, very healthy way, we're more apt to see healthier relationships. But ultimately, it starts at home, because what children see in the home is their relationship boot camp.
Yeah.
So what they see mom and dad do, whether they think they will do it or not, it's ingrained from such a young age, they're more likely to emulate those things. So whether it's actually allowing someone to verbally, emotionally, mentally, or physically abuse us, or whether it's actually to be an abuser, because that's
yeah.
what we know as normal.
Yeah, you know, and that is one of the things that I know, you know, whenever I've seen explosive situations, you know, and kids are around, that's my very first thought goes to them, you know, wondering, you know, if this is a tape that's going to be playing in their head, you know, for the rest of their life. You know, is this going to be something that's going to be, you know, impacting their relationships or, you know, or like you say, model, you know, what this particular behavior is. And you know, it's frightening because it's a, it seems that, you know, in many cases, you know, the abuse cycle can be handed down from generation to generation, you know, unless something is done to interrupt that process.
That is 100% correct. It is very common.
Yeah.
And if you think back to your own life, and I can remember when this happened to me in my early 20s, I said something, thought to myself, I sound just like my mother. And it wasn't anything
scary.
That was bad, but... But the point in me saying that is that these
right.
things that we learn and we hear as we're younger, they stay in our brain. And something, some unknown trigger can happen and we repeat the things that we have learned. So we have to be really consciously aware of being healthy and making very good patterns in our life to focus on how we talk to other people and how we talk to ourselves. These are all very, very important, and how we deal with stress. I think
yeah.
one of the things that we just don't do and teach in schools is how to deal with stress.
Yeah, and that's one of the most stressful situations for kids, and that is really – now, I do give credit. There is that one school system in San Francisco that's doing, you know, entering meditation into their process and is seeing great results, but that really needs to, you know, stress management and coping techniques are really so important and really should be included in curriculum.
Absolutely, and communication, because no matter what business you go into, whether it's your home life, if you look at it as just functioning, we interact with people, period. And so no matter what you do in life, communication is very, very necessary, and healthy communication.
Yeah.
So that's another area I think that should be taught. But regardless of that, it does start at home.
It does. It does very much. So, well, we're just about halfway through. I want to take just a quick break, and I do want to invite listeners, if you have any questions for Rebecca, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to type them in, and we will get to them after the break. And then when we come back from the break, Rebecca, I want to talk a little bit about, you know, the focus on victims and then, you know, the abusers, how the approach to handle, to helping both in that equation, the victims and the abuser. And, okay, so let me go ahead and take a quick break and then we'll be right back.
Excellent.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope that you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link to the approximately 1,000 shows that we have had over the past 5 years. Our show is available as a free podcast in the iTunes Store. You can subscribe there. Or even quicker, there is a link to our show on iTunes on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Pinterest, etc., and we have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. And finally, also on the site is a link to the great products we provide: books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store with essential oils and personal and spa products. There is so much for you to explore and enjoy on our website, www.biteradio.me. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Rebecca Mahan, and we've been talking about her program and book, VOTE, Victims Overcoming Traumatic Events. And again, you can find out more about Rebecca and her program by visiting one of two websites, RebeccaMahan.com or VOTEprogram.org. And again, there are direct links to both of those websites in the show page description. Okay, with that, we're back, Rebecca.
Thank you so much.
Sure. And before we go any further into talking a little bit about victims and coping mechanisms, I do want to maybe highlight that, you know, your book is kind of geared toward officers and first responders, but really the book and your program that you offer can really apply to any professional who deals with individuals who are victims of traumatic experiences, correct?
That's correct. And also, it can be a good friend who's wanting to respond and know what to do.
Oh, that's an excellent point. Excellent point. You know, because, I mean, many times it's that girlfriend out there who, you know, gets you get confided in about what's going on, and it's like, oh my God, what do I do? How do I help my friend? And that's a mm-hmm. that's a great point to be able to bring that up. Good. Okay. So I just wanted to let everybody know out there that it's for anybody dealing with trauma, or your friends or friends who are dealing with trauma. So definitely. And you also, in addition to the programs, you also do offer one-on-one coaching or counseling, correct?
I do.
Right.
And what I have found after responding to a number of different critical incidences or traumas is that we, as people, tend to respond the same way to trauma. So whether it is a domestic violence or it is another type of crisis, we tend to respond the same way.
So now you're talking about people in general or an individual who would respond to trauma, any kind of trauma, in the same manner?
And just the general populace. Most
general
of
population,
us will handle,
okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we generally respond the same to things that make us feel fear. And really, all emotions come down to one of two, and that is either love or fear. And so anything that is considered unhealthy or negative is fear-based, and anything else that is healthy or blissful, peaceful, those are all love-based. And so when we experience fear, our body tends to do something regardless of what it is. We have physiological things that happen within us, and we have certain thoughts, and we have a certain response. Some people might freeze at certain situations. Some people might get more verbal. For example, I know that when I've gone to the doctor's office, and I'm not sure what's going to happen, I get more talkative. Because
you get more
I want
what?
To talk through whatever. Talkative. You know, I want to talk
through. Oh, talkative, okay.
I'm so nervous.
let me talk it out.
Right. Let me just, you know, figure out what's going on here, and I'll talk so that I don't have to focus on whatever it is that I fear. And most of us don't want to admit that we're afraid of something. But we tend to do certain things behaviorally, physiologically, psychologically, when we're faced with fear. And we generally respond the same. So the techniques that I have found with the VOTE program are not only applicable to domestic violence, but they can be they can be utilized for things such as a sexual assault and things like that.
Okay, yeah. Okay, well, that's, and again, that's really important for listeners to recognize, too, that that the scope of what that trauma is wide. You know, really, basically anything that creates a that fear type of response within us.
It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing at how we respond to things. But part of helping victims in overcoming a trauma is allowing them to understand what it is that they fear and then conquer that fear. So it's very important.
Yeah. Now, earlier in the show, you kind of mentioned physical and emotional. So is it when you're talking about the your response and your program vote, is it really cover both of those, like emotional and physical trauma? So I mean, it's the whole scope of what traumatic kind of experiences could be.
It can be anything, absolutely.
Okay.
So you have a lot of domestic violence that can be strictly verbal for a long time, but there's not just one. I shouldn't say strictly, because they're coexisting. You'll have verbal and emotional, or verbal and mental, verbal, mental, and emotional, and because of how we're wired.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, the reason that I ask is I know of someone who is in a situation and has been for many years, who has been the subject of that that constant emotional and verbal battering, you know, and it really seems to take a toll, you know, and sometimes it seems that, you know, there is almost a general acceptance on her part that that's just the way that it is, and she's aware of it, but hasn't been able to take that leap to make a change.
So I'm kind of hearing that you're asking maybe why, and that, if I'm assuming correctly, would be something that most people do ask. Why doesn't the victim just leave? The person knows they're in a situation that is not healthy for them. They know they need to leave, but they just don't, and I don't understand why. And sometimes they don't even understand why until they begin to really assess what's going on with them, within themselves. But on a general scope, there are several different reasons why someone won't leave a volatile situation. One example could be their commitment with God. So their religion or their vows that they made, if they said, I vowed to this person, I will never leave them. And that's not what I'm going to do. I vowed before God. I made a commitment to God that I won't do that. And there's biblical scripture that says I can't get a divorce without this. And when it comes to that, they'll need to talk with their pastors or really learn scripture a little bit more to be able to see a little bit more clearly about those kinds of things. But there's other reasons, like finances, or I have the children, and the abuser, aggressor may have said, if you leave, I will do something to the children. So they don't leave because there's an underlying threat. It could be, if I break up the family, the kids will be more unstable, so I'm not going to leave. Or now, I'm going to be asked why by my friends, my family, my coworkers, and I have to come up with a reason to tell them, and they're going to want to know. People pry, and this is a very sacred thing to someone. So there's, and these are just some general things. There's many, many other reasons why people don't leave, and some of them have to do with the mental manipulation that the aggressor has on them. And the aggressor could have absolutely just come right out and said, hey, if you ever do this, I will hunt you down. And so now you're finding a lot more cases of stalking.
Yeah. And you know, and particularly like we talked about, you know, the how apparent they are on TV and just the high visibility. I mean, it would just seem to reinforce for someone that, well, you know, that does happen. Look at what just happened to so-and-so, you know, and it would reinforce the fear factor that the aggressor was putting forth.
Exactly. So this is a very, very strong fear-based issue. And for me to go back to your question before the break and talk to the victims and give some techniques on what to do, I would definitely say the first thing is to recognize that the situation is unhealthy in a different way than they currently do. And then decide if it's something, and they're going to know if it's escalating, because the explosive stage to where something is a fatality didn't start that way, or the person probably wouldn't have initiated any type of a relationship with that person.
Right.
So it happens over time, but the person can see how far the escalation has gone. Did it start with a verbal and then a slap and then a broken arm and a black eye, or where is it at, and decide, well, where is this going to go? And there's a normal amount of arguing between couples that there's conflict. But what is the resolution to that conflict? And if it isn't happening where there is some type of resolution, then the victim needs to decide what is going to be the safest for him or her. And I do say that him as well, because I have seen men who have been victims of domestic abuse. And so they need to decide. And then if they decide that they need to leave, they need to know all of the resources that are available to them.
Yeah.
Do they want to confide in friends? Do they want to stay local and go just to a shelter? Is it going to be a temporary thing, or do they need to get away for a long period of time? And there is a lot to this. And while they're going through the different situations that they're experiencing, they should be doing things that are going to allow a release of the emotions, such as journaling or anti-anxiety type of things, taking a lavender bath, doing things that are just going to be able to keep them as healthy as they can until they decide specifically what it is that they want to do. And if finances, again, are one issue for them, they know how they can obtain the financial assistance through the state that they live in.
Yeah, that's a great way to approach, to recognize, you know, what the problem is, and then work your way through that. Now, whenever one of the things that I think it's on your the Vote website talks about minimizing and kind of working through the traumatic events. So, you know, when these things happen, when we're confronted with these traumatic events or domestic violence, they kind of permanently make a mark on one, so that we really, for the person who's experiencing it, to be able to have a healthier, happier life, need to be able to have a way of coping with, you know, that particular experience, even if it is in the past, to be able to move forward.
Well, they do. I mean, we need to be able to address things that have affected us, and we all have different ways that we can release the stress and move forward from it. And there's a lot of different types of techniques, and it depends on how a person handles stress, and it also depends on how much the trauma affected that particular individual. And so there's a lot of techniques, and there is some general things that many people can do to really begin to get healthier. And if there's still certain things that a person is not able to work through, they may need to go to see a therapist or a psychologist or a domestic violence expert, people that are trained to help someone through specific traumas, because there may be something that is more ingrained. And when it comes to going to a therapist or a psychologist, a lot of people shy away from that because they're afraid of that. I'm not crazy. I shouldn't be the one that has to go get help. I didn't do anything wrong. But things do affect us, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with learning new skills and being provided them by someone who knows what works. And so there's a lot of different techniques. You'll see, you may have heard of tapping therapy. There's CBT.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of different things that can be very effective in overcoming trauma. And then there's just general things that we can do. And one of the most important things to do, regardless of what our situation is, but is to get into a healthy mindset and start recognizing how we talk to ourselves.
Okay. Yeah, that seems, you know, it really seems that in much of this, that it's one of the core components is that self perception, self-value, self-worth, you know, basically, you know, recognizing, you know, that there's no reason why we should be a victim of any kind of abuse, period.
Absolutely, 100%. There's no thing that is justified for physical violence. But the healthier that we get mentally, we become stronger, and we have the strength to respect ourselves enough not to tolerate things that aren't healthy. And we will be able to establish healthy boundaries, and if someone crosses those boundaries, then we know how we're going to address the situation because we thought of where our boundary line is.
Yeah, very much. Now, one of the things I noticed on your website is that you also work with businesses, you know, and corporations, and you know, what I mean, because we see a lot of violence in the workplace, you know, that explosive stage, you know, playing out in the work situation. So can you talk a little bit about maybe your experience with that type of environment and violence?
I haven't had to tend to a situation that was a crisis at a workplace. But I have trained safety precautions in reference to what we consider active shooter. So you have a different type of verbiage now when it comes to workplace violence, if you will, because now, as you've seen in media, you have a lot of homicidal situations that have stemmed from domestic violence. And so law enforcement doesn't say, oh, well, this is a domestic violence situation. When the call comes in, you know, shots have been fired or something like that. That is now what is considered an active shooter situation. And so we have taught workplaces how to be safe, more as far as being prepared in how to handle that kind of a situation. What do I need to do to be safe? Because no matter how you look at it, Robert, we have to be safe, whether it's at home or in our workplace or at a school or anywhere else. We have to be safe. And the challenge comes from a situation that has started in the home, and now we have unintended victims. And it can be neighbors just from hearing things. It could be in the workplace. It can be there's just so many different things that stem from what goes on at home. A lot of people say this is behind closed doors. Nobody's ever going to know. But as things progress, it does affect other people. There's a lot of unintended victims.
Yeah. You know, and as you were just talking, you know, this brought to mind just the recent rash of school shootings, you know, and you know, not just adults, young adults. I mean, the young children actually carrying it out. I mean, to me, it's just astounding that that it gets to the point, you know, where there are just so many victims, you know, as a result of just whomever was in their circle of the aggressor's life not being aware enough or proactive enough to be able to, you know, bring down the tension from explosive down to at least, you know, the cycle of where it's building and kind of de-escalated in a way.
Mm-hmm. And to do that, it should, I mean, at the very beginning of any relationship, we need to figure out, okay, what is the other person's, how does the other person speak? What does their words mean? When I say the color red, you might be thinking cherry red, and I'm thinking more of a dark red. And So our words may not always be exactly what the other person's language is from whatever culture it is that they come from. So when we have a relationship and we want to make it healthy, we have to try and understand how each person speaks. Oh, we could be absolutely offended when someone isn't trying to offend us because our language is a little bit different. So, and I'm just talking about our emotional language or the meaning behind specific words. But not only that, but then we have to decide ahead of time before a conflict arises, how will I address something if the person that I'm with does something or says something that I don't necessarily care for? Do I not say anything and the person continues to do that and I become more and more angry over time? Or is there something that I can do to address that? And couples, if they come together, they talk about this before a situation comes up and says, okay, this is what we need to do. If a situation comes up and I'm hurt by it, I don't understand it, or I feel offended, we should be able to talk about it. Or if things get in a situation where I'm feeling like I'm going to fly off the handle, if I walk out the door because I need to take a walk and cool off, don't follow me and ask me questions or try to get me to come back and resolve it because I'm in a position where I'm feeling that I'm not going to be in control. And you cannot allow yourself to not be in that position. So there's a lot of things couples can do to be in a healthy position well before conflict arises, but they have to take the time to address those things. A lot of times we just think that euphoria of love and excitement that we have is going to be like that forever. But situations happen in life that can change that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, that was a really good point about the leaving and walking and a long time. It really seems that, you know, it's just so important to have an understanding of how to resolve conflict. I mean, conflict will occur, so it's important to understand how I myself respond to conflict and how my partner responds to conflict and work out a plan or a way to be able to resolve it. Resolve it in a healthy manner. And not only with partners, but I would see, you know, in particular cases with, you know, some of these children who have explosive, you know, tendencies or, you know, or they can see the tension building up, that it would, for a parent and child, to be able to also, you know, have a discussion about how to resolve conflict.
Absolutely. What I teach in handling conflict or becoming more healthy can be applied to any type of relationship, whether it is a couple to couple, or, you know, man to woman, parent to child, child to parent, employee to boss to employee, coworkers. It doesn't matter because, like I was sharing with you towards the beginning of the program, we tend to respond the same way. So it doesn't really matter who that face is that's standing there. That situation is presented, we're going to handle ourselves a certain way. And so if we get healthy and we apply these tactics of being healthy and thinking in a healthy way, then what ends up happening is that what we do is, we respond in a really good way to those people as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, with like your example of you being talkative, in kind of tense situations, that probably one of the worst things would be to try and shut you down, prevent you from being talkative during those kinds of stages, correct?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it just seems that there's so much that we can, because it's a very complex issue, when it comes to, because you mentioned early on, there are just so many different factors that can contribute to someone getting to that explosive stage, and then, add in the possible sparks, add to that the variety of ways people can respond to them. It can be, it just seems that the most important part in all of this is being able to get at the heart of the conflict and resolving it, de-escalating it, and kind of solving it in as healthy a way as possible.
Yes, exactly.
My goodness. Well, now we've covered a lot of different areas. Is there any particular area or subject or any comments that you would like to share before we close? I mean, anything in particular that maybe we didn't cover?
No, I think that this has really given a lot of the listeners some food for thought. You can get more information at my website, RebeccaLMahan.com or voteprogram.org. But when we start thinking about these things, it actually can be very draining at first, taking the time to be thinking about those and face those things that we fear or making decisions on how we're going to handle the things that we're in.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be draining. But I think in the long run, isn't it, once we've gone through the process and kind of learned about ourselves, learned about the other person involved, and established a process, then in general, then I would think that any other future conflicts, it would make it easier. It's kind of like once you establish a healthy process, then future conflicts will be minimal, and you'd be able to work through them much quicker.
Oh, most definitely.
Yeah. I guess an investment in your future. Future
That's
conflict.
Exactly right. It'll help in all relationships that you're involved with.
Exactly. Well, I really want to thank you, Rebecca, for your time today. I've really enjoyed talking with you. And again, I know this is such an important topic. And like I said, I've had people in my circle where it touched, who have been touched by this topic. And it's always nice to be able to have a resource to go to help at least get the person started in trying to resolve the situation to be happier. I mean, life is too short to be miserable and abused and a victim.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me. I do appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. And I do want to let people know that you are on Facebook, too. We're connected there, so they can connect with you there as well, correct?
Correct, yes.
All righty. Well, thanks a lot again. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you as well.
All right. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Rebecca Mahan. We've been talking about her book and program, Vote, Victims Overcoming Traumatic Events. And again, you can find out more by visiting her website, which is www.RebeccaMahan.com, or visit www.VoteProgram.org. And definitely, if you have someone in your life who is involved in some kind of domestic violence or abusive situation, and you want to go ahead and give them a resource, go ahead and purchase her book and give it to them as a gift and help them along the way. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Bite Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.